Imagine a world where saying men are not women could get you physically assaulted on a university campus, where scientific definitions change overnight to support political narratives. This isn't dystopian fiction. It's America under political correctness. Michael Knowles' Speechless explores how language manipulation serves as the primary battlefield in our culture war. What makes this exploration particularly compelling is that Knowles doesn't just criticize the left. He takes his own conservative movement to task for fundamentally misunderstanding what they're fighting against. The book gained significant traction during the 2020 pandemic, when many Americans began questioning why certain gatherings were deemed dangerous while others were celebrated as essential, despite identical viral transmission risks. At its core, this is a story about who controls language, and therefore reality itself. "When I use a word," Humpty Dumpty tells Alice, "it means just what I choose it to mean." This captures political correctness perfectly, not merely softening reality through euphemisms, but contradicting it. Handicapable means the opposite of handicapped. Social justice often means injustice through favoritism. Reproductive rights refers to ending reproduction. This manipulation serves political ends by short-circuiting debate through linguistic sleight of hand. The same-sex marriage debate was settled by redefining terms before substantive discussion occurred. Terms like birthing person replace mother, while chest feeding substitutes for breastfeeding, changes that alter fundamental biological reality. What makes this particularly insidious is how it blurs public and private spheres. Common courtesies become mandatory speech codes. Personal pronouns become political statements. Even scientific terms like male and female grow contentious. The movement's power lies in framing resistance as proof of bigotry, creating a self-reinforcing cycle where each linguistic victory enables further semantic shifts. By 1929, imprisoned Italian communist Antonio Gramsci realized Marx's predicted socialist revolution was failing because workers remained loyal to traditional values and institutions. Marx had underestimated culture's profound influence on historical development. Gramsci observed Western workers' deep attachment to traditions, families, churches, and communities. His solution, the Long March Through the Institutions, prioritized capturing cultural power before political power. Unlike traditional Marxists focused on economic class struggle, Gramsci emphasized controlling society's cultural institutions, education, media, entertainment, to achieve cultural hegemony. This explains why movements like Black Lives Matter focus on racial identity rather than class struggle. While democratic socialists wage what Gramsci called a war of maneuver through electoral politics, BLM pursues a war of position by transforming cultural institutions. Despite Black Americans' historically conservative views on family structure, BLM's platform advocated disrupting the Western prescribed nuclear family structure, revealing cultural Marxist foundations beneath racial justice rhetoric. In 2018, Maxine Waters advocated harassing Trump officials in public, while Hillary Clinton declared civility impossible with opponents. The phrase "tolerant left" has become ironic, with conservatives crying hypocrisy and liberals deeming conservatives unworthy of tolerance. Herbert Marcuse's 1965 essay provided the intellectual foundation for this contradiction. He argued true tolerance requires intolerance toward prevailing opinions while supporting suppressed views. Since the masses were indoctrinated, they needed information slanted in the opposite direction. Marcuse concluded, liberating tolerance would mean intolerance against movements from the right and toleration of movements from the left. Mid-century feminists mainstreamed political correctness. Carol Honisch's 1970 essay declared, "Personal problems are political problems, making private life political while politicizing personal life." Justice Scalia noted that apparent expansions of liberty actually restrict political rights. Feminists weaponized language, creating terms like women and chairperson to challenge traditional society. Simone de Beauvoir's ultimate goal was clear. As long as the family and the myth of the family and the maternal instinct are not destroyed, women will still be oppressed. Universities both birthed and were ultimately destroyed by political correctness. Despite being safe environments, activists have fabricated incidents portraying campuses as hotbeds of racism, from staged cross burnings to students writing racist threats against themselves. Left-wing activists claim 1 in 5 women are raped during college, using methodologically flawed surveys that redefine terms and suffer from non-response bias. Justice Department data shows female students are actually less likely to be sexually assaulted than non-students, with victimization rates far lower than activist surveys suggest. This fabrication serves a larger ideological purpose, revealed by Jesse Jackson's 1987 Stanford chant, "Hey, hey, ho, ho, Western Civ has gotta go." Alan Bloom's The Closing of the American Mind identified political correctness's paradox. The pursuit of openness had closed minds. Education once aimed at excellence and virtue, but now valued openness above all. Sex illustrates how campus standards evolved. Until mid-20th century, universities enforced strict guidelines between sexes. By the early 1970s, these restrictions collapsed, but sexual liberation quickly gave way to new rigid standards, like Antioch College's 1991 policy requiring explicit verbal consent each time at each level of sexual activity. When President George H.W. Bush addressed political correctness in 1991, he mistakenly described it as a crusade for civility rather than recognizing it as a campaign to remake Western culture. While Bush defended abstract free speech, conservatives like Robert Kellner criticized this as a phony war that avoided substantive cultural positions. Pat Buchanan offered a more direct alternative at the 1992 Republican convention, confronting radical feminism and politically correct movements in what he called a necessary culture war. Bush, focused on foreign policy, showed no interest in developing a conservative cultural agenda. Modern leftists have adopted Marcuse's framework, claiming conservative speech makes them unsafe and causes physical harm. They invoke the fire in a crowded theater cliché while ignoring its political context and subsequent legal revisions. Society hasn't eliminated prejudices, just changed them. What was once taboo, vulgar language, sexual content, is now acceptable, while formerly accepted speech, moral judgments, is condemned. David Mamet's Oleana illustrated political correctness's trap. John saw only two options, betraying principles or becoming a brute, missing the third, maintaining standards while refusing unreasonable demands. Conservatives have misunderstood political correctness as mere censorship rather than a competing moral standard. The path forward isn't free speech absolutism, which has never existed, but developing a substantive vision based on moral conscience that recognizes good, evil, virtue, and vice as knowable through reason and revelation. All cultures necessarily cancel some ideas. What matters is what merits ostracism. Rather than vague appeals to Western civilization, conservatives must articulate a specific vision of the common good. When they fail to define the good, they surrender that power to opponents. Despite its claims, political correctness isn't primarily championed by minorities it purports to defend. Research shows 80% of Americans find it problematic, including majorities of Asians, 82%, Hispanics, 87%, and American Indians, 88%. Support breaks down along political lines, with majority support from just one demographic, progressive activists, ironically, the whitest, richest, most educated group in America. The battle isn't merely about free speech, but about which standards will govern society. No society exists without standards. The question is, whose standards will prevail? Cultural healing requires moving beyond defensive appeals to abstract liberty toward a positive vision of the good society.